This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
All right, Alec, let's go into the locker room. Let's just start in the locker room from one with Wolfpack. Dave Doran with a cigar in hand, I believe, in the locker room after the game.
Love you guys. Yeah, man. Let's go.
It took 9 years to do that, but we did. We are the best team in this league. Guys, I want to thank our coaching staff, man. I just want to tell you one thing, though, man. We got a badass quarterback. He sat in my office. He told me we were going to beat these guys a long time ago. A long time ago.
Game boss for everybody!
So there were... The audio kept cutting out there. What was the problem?
So many swear words. I'm shocked. The football coach, you know, using the F-bomb around my children.
They're put off by that in a certain municipality.
In that context, in everyone's okay with it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it almost in every context.
I'm okay with it in every context.
So, I mean, you don't want...
There are pearl clutchers out there who will be upset about it in different contexts, and then, oh, no, but it's football.
Do you have
the football coach teaching our men how to be men.
Do you have Rory McIlroy after he won his match? That was awesome. Anyway, Rory's my favorite. Look, that was awesome. It was a great scene. Quickly to the facts-only portion of this story. NC State beat Clemson 27-21, double overtime. First win, forget about top 10 win. This is the first win of bona fide significance in Dave Doran's 8-plus seasons. There isn't a single win you can point to over the course of Doran's tenure here at State. And I've said this before. I think the program is in great shape. At some point, you do have to back it up with wins, maybe not just like this, but other big wins. But this is the first win of significance since Dave Doran took the job. By every reasonable measure, the Wolfpack were the better football team. Yards, third down efficiency, first down, time of possession, quarterback play, blah, 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 blah. And yet, they needed double overtime. Because it wasn't all good. There were 11 penalties. There were almost as many missed field goals. Gosh, I fell for Christopher Dunn, man. Oh, geez.
Flashbacks.
Holy cow. Kyle Bambard was sitting at home going, no, not you. There were a couple of episodes of effort failure by wide receivers. Enough with the gadget plays. Can we stuff those in a box somewhere and bury them in the ocean? There was a bout of far too conservative decision making. You know what? Maybe don't settle for a 30-something yard field goal. Maybe try to get it closer. But man, it is hard to finish the job when you want it so badly and you need it so badly and it's right there in front of you and you know that you are the better team that day. It's so hard emotionally, psychologically to take it. Because to me, the mental obstacle was at least as big of an issue as the physical. Clemson already not the same Clemson. They're still excellent on defense, dangerous on offense, as they showed you. But then you throw in a bunch of the injuries that they sustained during the game, and you could tell that this was the Wolfpack's game. It was actually the Wolfpack's game to lose, and they nearly lost it. So good for them. Great win for the Wolfpack. Let me move on to North Carolina because I have to ask you this question, Alec. And Will Brinson will come up in about 3.5 minutes. What was the more stunning result this weekend? NC State doing the thing they haven't done in more than 8 years, or UNC getting their heels handed to them by Georgia Tech? What was the more stunning result?
Honestly, I think it was UNC getting their heels handed to them.
100%. Because smart people said that State was going to beat Clemson.
Correct.
Even based on nothing, smart people could see that possibility out there. I didn't see that. I didn't see North Carolina going to Georgia Tech and just getting throttled. And that's what they did. Mack Brown, after the game, not feeling great.
Thought the kids tried, thought they fought through it at the second half, but I'm disappointed. I'm embarrassed by our play, by our coaching, by me. Hate it for our fans because the fans have been so good since I've been back. Sally's been back, and this is not who we want to be or who we are.
All right, they were just – I mean, they scored the first touchdown, and that was it. They went away. Georgia Tech was just better. Carolina was careless with the ball. I have some issues with what they're doing offensively that we will discuss. But Dan Wolkin from USA Today does a column called The Misery Index, in which he basically which fan base is feeling it the most in a negative way. So I want to read from Dan Wolkin's column today because it was clear that Dan couldn't decide on which joke to use, so he used them all. If you're the kind of person who buys a fancy-looking sports car with new upholstery and fresh paint only to discover that the odometer was rolled back and the engine hasn't been tuned since 1988, North Carolina is the team for you. That's a good one. If you pick expensive restaurants based off Yelp reviews while on vacation, the Tar Heels are your kind of ripoff. If you bought Milli Vanilli albums because you enjoyed their vocals, you're just the kind of sucker who thought Mack Brown's team was a legitimate playoff contender this season. It's a pretty good start, right? That's all in the first three paragraphs of Dan Wolkin's Misery Index column. There's more. The Tar Heels, it turns out, were as phony as Firefest. I'm sorry. I took a knee on that one. And disappeared from the scene faster than Crystal Pepsi. I actually don't remember Crystal Pepsi. After getting absolutely wrecked by Georgia Tech on Saturday, North Carolina as a preseason top 10 team is one of those notions that seems as ill-advised in retrospect as a $5 seafood buffet. How many jokes is that? All accurate. All warranted. I mean, they're just an absolutely embarrassing performance. And before we get to Will Brinson, and I want to mention two other scores, and there's more to talk about, but why are they trying to turn Sam Howell into Tommy Frazier from Nebraska back in the early 90s? What's that about? I know he used to run in high school. He was a big runner in high school. But guess what? He's going to be an NFL quarterback. Run him occasionally. Let's not run him all day. I don't get it. I mean, I know that they have offensive line issues, and they committed some untimely, is that even a word, penalties. But holy cow, Georgia Tech ain't that good to just get it handed to you, and you don't wake up again until it's 27-7. Handed to you. But North Carolina's got some issues structurally as a team. Their defense still isn't very good. And it's hard to see them having anything close. Forget about, they're not going to have the year they thought they might have, but it's hard to see them having anything close to the year they thought they were going to have. So, it'll be almost a miracle if they can get to 8 wins. They've got two losses already, which means they can only afford two more. I mean, how many teams on their schedule do we look at today and go, oh, yeah, they're better than Carolina. Oh, yeah, they're better than Carolina. There are four of them, five of them on their schedule? Based on what we've seen. Unbelievable. All right, Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick 6 podcast moderator. Before I welcome in Will, Wake Forest, 37-17 over Virginia Friday night. They look all the part of a team that's going to contend for the Atlantic Division as well. And Duke beat Kansas in the State Farm Tip-Off Classic, 52-33. Clearly, Mike Krzyzewski's defense is on point to hold the Jayhawks to 33 points. Kansas couldn't knock down a three to save their lives. Duke slowed it down, and when it, I think they played four corners the rest of the way, 52-33. All right, Will Brinson, how are you?
I'm doing great, Adam Gold.
So I can't decide if Sean McVay sleeps better at night now that he has Matthew Stafford, or if he wakes up every hour excited, runs down to his office and draws up another play, and then tries to go back to sleep to get ready for the day at work. Because Sean McVay looks like every morning is Christmas morning for him.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's Jared Goff versus Matthew Stafford is the difference between, you know, let's say hypothetically going to a college football game on Saturday and waking up Sunday morning. And if maybe you're tired for whatever reason and you're a little slow, a little groggy, but the coffee tastes better after a win and the coffee tastes awful after a loss. Coffee tastes great with Matthew Stafford. Coffee tastes terrible with Jared Goff. And Matthew Stafford didn't make a billion throws yesterday that Jared Goff can't make. And Jared Goff's actually played pretty well, so I don't want to just completely dogpile him. But the way Stafford looks already so comfortable in this offense, his ability to push the ball downfield, he's not like faster than Jared Goff, but he's got quicker feet inside the pocket. And when they do these bootlegs off the play action, that's just sort of his bread and butter. They really, really incorporated Deshaun Jackson this week in a big way. And that's, to me, that opens things up even more, because when you get that, I know Deshaun Jackson's old and he doesn't necessarily stay healthy all the time, but when you get his vertical threat going and you have Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods and Tyler Higbee underneath, that's a really tough offense to stop.
Yep.
And you could tell by the way that McVay was reacting on the sidelines before halftime that this game for the Rams was not another NFC game. This was, for lack of a better phrase, a statement game to let the Buccaneers know, to let the NFL know, to let the NFC know that the Rams are very much in the belief that they can, you know, not only just win the division, but win a title.
Oh, I think they're legit. And as long as they can keep Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey healthy for this year. Now, I'm not saying that there are not other players on that defense that are important, because they have a lot of really good players on that defense that are all important. But everything hinges on 99 and 5. If those two guys stay healthy, their defense is at the very least going to be good enough. Because we have been waiting for the Rams' offense. Sean McVay's the offensive mastermind. He's the mad scientist. And we've been waiting for that offense to be great. And if he's got a trigger man who can operate it, and it looks like he does, man, to me, all yesterday did was prove that there is more than one Super Bowl contender, legit Super Bowl contender in the NFC.
Absolutely. And the other thing, too, is remember when, I mean, gosh, back 2018, it feels like 400 years ago, obviously, but, you know, the Rams and Chiefs played that Monday night football game that inspired this is the NFL has changed.
Right.
Star Wars is attacking, and then the Rams offense fell apart. People sort of figured not figured out McVay, but figured out ways to slow down that offense that had been, you know, it had been crafted in spite of Jared Goff. And you know, like McVay, you know, you always hear the stories about how he's in Jared Goff's ear talking up until the second that the communication cuts off between the headset and the coach and the quarterback. And it was almost like holding his hand and pointing. You know, he's like a joystick. And now, as they've just, you know, you've heard him describe it through third parties and announcers and people who meet with him in, you know, pre-production meetings. You know, it's a partnership, and Matthew Stafford clearly knows what he's doing in that. And I think McVay's, you know, the it looks like the gamble they made is paying off, because the way to, it wasn't adjust the offense and fix the offense and find a way to make the offense better against defenses that had adjusted to it. It was just get a better quarterback. And they managed to do that this offseason in pretty impressive fashion.
All right, let me ask you this. Yeah. I want you to hear Aaron Rodgers from after the game, and we'll talk about the game. Here is Rodgers talking about the importance of a win over the 49ers.
Give some legitimacy to some of the things we've been talking about, that was kind of an aberration, and that we are a talented football team. It felt like in the locker room today that we finally had the energy that I've been waiting to see. And before the game, it wasn't the type of energy we had in Jacksonville, but I knew we needed a spark. And Matt and I talked earlier this week about whether or not he wanted to take the ball. And I said, let's talk about it later in the week, but it feels like we probably should. And Matt and I talked briefly in the locker room before the game. He said, I want to take the ball. I said, let's do it. And to go down, and I know we only got a field goal, but to go down, get a field goal, come back, get a touchdown, and our defense played so well in the first half. That was
Aaron Rodgers after the game. That was an interesting 15 minutes of postgame that I listened to this morning. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com. A couple of things that stuck out to me. One, I don't know what aberration is as a word. I think it's aberration, but that's fine. Yeah. And the other thing was, do you think Aaron Rodgers included himself in the lack of energy from the game in Jacksonville against the Saints to open the season?
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, he's, you know, it didn't sound like, he wasn't like, you know, it's my fault, but yeah, he didn't have the energy that week one game. It's a good reminder that, you know, week one, usually a liar, you know, the Steelers beat the Bills and
we're going to talk about that too.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, same thing, you know, the Saints, you know, as the visitor team in Jacksonville, you know, took care of business, throttled the Packers. But the last 2 weeks, we've really seen Aaron Rodgers get right. To me, the bigger deal, and Rodgers referenced it, the first half defense from the Packers was awesome.
Yeah.
They did a great job of getting after Jimmy Garoppolo, of, you know, hitting, of not letting the 49ers run the ball at all. And they had been, you know, really a team that you could run on the first 2 weeks of the season. And that had been a problem for them for several years running now. And so it's, to me, I mean, again, you don't want to take too much from 1 week, but to go out there with Matt LaFleur against his old boss, Kyle Shanahan, who had, you know, beaten him pretty soundly the few times they played. And, you know, with the whole Aaron Rodgers, a little icy yeah. handshake after the game, the whole Aaron Rodgers drama that San Francisco inquired about him. And to play defense the way they did against that, what is supposed to be a fantastic San Francisco offense that eventually got going, that said a lot to me about Green Bay and where they reside in the sort of the pecking order of the NFC. Because, you know, I think you take San Francisco is probably right there with them. The game, you know, could have won the game.
Sure.
But I think it's, you know, I think it's the Bucs, Rams, Niners, and Packers. And that's sort of who you're going to be contending with right now if you're trying to win that NFC championship.
Why isn't Davante Adams double covered on that final drive? I mean, I don't care who else.
How about single covered?
Well, yeah, I mean, they played obviously a four deep zone. I guess that's called cover four. I don't know what these defenses are called. But Adams is just running uncovered across the middle of the field. Now, theoretically, they had the area covered because Fred Warner, the linebacker, was fairly deep. But it doesn't matter. Aaron Rodgers is going to find a way to get the ball in. He's ridiculous. He's a magician. But I just don't understand why you don't put two guys on Davante Adams in that situation.
Well, I mean, a couple of things where you can certainly say the 49ers mismanaged it from a coaching perspective. One, you know, you go down, you get inside the red zone. You know that you're down 6 points, touchdown and an extra point wins the game if you can melt enough clock off. And they melted a bunch of clock. But with 12 seconds left on the play clock, and I believe 3 timeouts, and 43 seconds left in the game, they snapped the ball. And the play was a Kyle Juszczyk touchdown. That's great.
Yeah.
You've got to score. But with that much time, with that many timeouts, with that creative a play caller, And with Aaron Rodgers on the other side, you have got to melt that clock a little bit further. Don't give him – and they remember, the Packers had used all their timeouts.
Yes.
Through a bad challenge and having to avoid a delay of game situation. So that was a mistake by Kyle Shanahan and his staff not to melt a little, like 10 more seconds off the clock. And then I agree with you on the, coming back the other way. Look, if you want to give Aaron Rodgers that much time, you need to put three dudes on Davante Adams.
Yeah.
Make him beat you with someone else. Make him hit Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Alan Lazard or Robert Tonyan. Let somebody other than Davante Adams beat you. And I, man, the other thing about the Packers too, the energy that Rodgers referenced, the two moments. One, I think it was early on when the Packers scored, and LaFleur let out a bunch of F bombs, like, you know, enthusiastically right. yelling across the field. And then when Rodgers gets up there and clocks the ball before the game winning field goal from Mason Crosby, he gets low and starts fist pumping aggressively. that's just the energy you want to see from him.
Yeah. Look, that also, when you're kicking off and you're San Francisco,
and there's,
exactly, yeah, the ball has to be in the field of play.
Melt the clock, squib it.
The ball has to be in the field of play. Being a head coach, there's a lot of things going on. Like, I made some mental mistakes 2 weeks ago coaching my kids' soccer team that in retrospect I shouldn't have made, and I've thought about. Like on the drive home from the game that we lost. So I understand. I feel for Kyle Shanahan. Of course, I'm mocking myself and I'm mocking the whole thing. All right, let me ask you about the Chiefs. And I don't want to make this only about the Chiefs because the Chargers won the game in Kansas City 30-24.
Yep.
Do the Chiefs have a defensive problem?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And by the way, I don't know if you read Peter King's Football Morning America column, but he hadn't talked to Andy Reid, but he knows the people in Kansas City pretty well. But I think Andy Reid's fine now, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know, the Chiefs' statement was like, "Coach is in stable condition," which is, you know, if you're in stable, if somebody's saying you're in stable condition, that means it was probably you were not in stable condition,
right?
Before.
At one point, right?
No, yeah, you know exactly, and Peter King wrote that it might have been really dicey if Andy Reid had to stay on the field for an overtime in that game. And it just sounds like I don't know. I mean, look, I guess my point is, if Andy Reid is forced to miss any time, yeah, I think that will adversely affect the Chiefs offensively. And yes, they have a defensive problem. They are just not good on defense right now. Now, we've seen them come together as the season goes along. In multiple years where the defense just starts to get a little bit better, figures things out, and plays well down the stretch, that could totally happen. But right now, it doesn't look like it. And the difference right now is that the Broncos and the Raiders, maybe both of them are paper tiger-ish. You know, the Broncos have played three of the four worst teams in football.
Right.
But they're 3-0, you know, just like the Panthers. You know, there's three wins, and the Chargers are 2-1. The Chiefs are below 500 for the first time since week 10 of 2015.
Right.
You may recall the Panthers were 9-0. Bakari Rambo and Terrence Newman were defensive players of the week in the AFC and NFC respectively.
What was the price of gas? Tell me what the price of gas.
Number one hit, you know.
Tell me what was number one at the box office all the way back. It's like my parents. You could go to a movie for a nickel. All of that. Look, I do. I think the Chiefs, first of all, the division. You mentioned some of the teams in the division without getting into these specific games because we're going to take a break here in a second and come back and talk about a bunch of things. But that division is a problem for Kansas City if they have a defensive problem, because obviously the Chargers with Justin Herbert can play offense, even though the Chargers lose games better than anybody else in the league. They figure out ways to lose. The Broncos have a great defense and might be at least difficult to beat, but the Raiders look like they've got something, even though they were kind of fortunate again to win at home in overtime. That's a difficult division to have a suspect defense in.
Yeah, and by the way, The Martian was the number one movie in box office.
Excellent.
Great. I love The Martian.
I never saw it.
You got to watch The Martian. You serious with Matt Damon? You got to watch The Martian.
Dude, do you know how many movies I haven't seen?
You got really? The Martian is awesome.
Never seen it.
He's trapped on Mars. There's no actual anyway.
There's no actual Martians. He's just trapped on Mars.
Yeah, it's a really cool space movie. Okay. You should watch it.
All right.
Yeah. But so yeah, the Chiefs, look, the Chiefs are probably going to be fine. You know, they're probably going to figure it out and probably going to win that division. But this is definitely, you know, 3 weeks into the season, the closest it's felt in a long time to somebody actually being able to knock them off. And, you know, again, with the Andy Reid stuff, you know, we don't know what the timeline for that's going to be. You know, it could be possible he's back coaching this week. He could have to miss a month, you know, just for health reasons. Who knows? Maybe, you know, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And if, you know, if the Chiefs continue to slip or they're not able to just sort of, you know, Eric Bieniemy can't just step right in and things roll smoothly, then, yeah, these other teams could pile up wins and move ahead of the Chiefs. And I they're still going to be a playoff team. I would be shocked if they weren't, obviously. You know, four weeks from now, let's readjust what we thought, you know, right now. But I mean, yeah, there are some red flags and some warts on the Chiefs in a way that, you know, we don't expect to see from this Patrick Mahomes team.
They beat the Browns in week one. I don't know
they should be 0-3.
Right. I don't know if they were better than the Browns in week one. They just won the football game. There are a lot of good teams in the AFC. I think there's really, in my mind, only one good team in the AFC East, but there are at least two good teams. Well, there are two good teams in the AFC North. The AFC West is obviously very good. The AFC South, we're not 100% sure.
There's
about.
Not any good teams. The Titans should run. I mean, in hindsight, not like the Titans should have been an absolute triple max whale play lock slammer. To win that division at -115 when Carson Wentz is undergoing foot surgery. I mean, you see him walking off the field yesterday.
There.
I mean, the walking is being generous. I mean, this is the man with. I mean, I don't know about you. I've only got two ankles, and if both of them are sprained, I ain't walking anywhere. Much less playing quarterback.
Does Matt Nagy have to go in Chicago? Well, I mean, that game plan, based on everything I heard this morning and last night, that game plan was set up for Justin Fields to suck. And they got it. Success. Justin Fields sucked.
They've had 45 or 47 yards of offense.
Right.
In 2021. That's hard to do. Just in garbage time alone, you should be able to rack up like 150 yards. The thing about Fields, and I said this last week, if Matt Nagy, I was banking on, I backed the Bears at +7.5. I like Chicago to keep it close. I was expecting Matt Nagy, as a theoretically intelligent offensive coach and not idiotic human, to design a playbook, to bring things out to, like, use RPOs, you know, run bootlegs, cut the field in half, do things that make Justin Fields' life easier. Don't ask him to be Justin Fields. Don't ask him to be person behind Andy Dalton on the depth chart. And that's so discouraging to see that. And yeah, it might. I mean, Bears fans, if they fired Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace tomorrow, Bears fans would throw a parade.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know where they go, and it's a tough time of the year, obviously, to do that. But the Bears feel like they've got a playoff-caliber defense. They just needed a quarterback to keep
it.
Well, they might not.
They definitely feel that way, but they don't.
Right.
They just, they're not very good.
Yes, that is true.
They're just bad.
that is true. But at some point, they have to figure out, are we trying to win now, or are we going to try and get Justin Fields better and think about next year? And if that's the case, they should probably be offering up a lot of their good defensive players before the trade deadline and get some assets. I hate to be baseball about this, but maybe that's what the Chicago Bears should do. We'll close on this. How did the Bills lose to the Steelers in week one?
Yeah, week one's just a liar, man. That's all it is.
Yeah, no. Seriously, how did they lose to the Steelers in week one? The Steelers stink.
I'll tell you what. So what happened? This is my theory on the Steelers. Steelers have two extreme weaknesses in their secondary and on their offensive line in the run game.
And their quarterback.
They can at least move the ball passing it because, you know, washed up human can move the ball 5 yards on the field. But Stephen Tuitt's hurt. Tyson Alualu's hurt. TJ Watt is hurt, and so their strength, that defensive line, that's what bottled up the Bills, and it's just everyone's banged up, and that's just going to be a problem, and they're going to be really, really bad until that changes. If you haven't seen it yet, go to Steven Ruiz's Twitter. He took film of Ben from yesterday. ran it through the video editor, made it look like an old timey Western
beautiful
clip, and then put saloon piano music behind it. It's pretty good.
The Steelers are not good. They are not a good football team at all. You are a great football team, Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, Pick Six podcast moderator. You're the man. We will talk to you next week.
All right. See you, buddy.
Boom, boom, boom. Shoot you right down.
The curse is broken. NC State fans, finally. Finally. Been here 9 years and seen a lot of crazy stuff. And people have talked about it and didn't believe it. But I got to tell you, I think it was real and it's not there anymore. So we can move on now and be happy about that.
Dave Doran, head coach NC State, after the 27-21 double overtime win over Clemson. And he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. All right, I was going to start somewhere else, but were you a believer in the curse, or was that just post-game euphoria talking?
No, I believed in it. I didn't when I first got here. I thought it was a load of, you know what,
yeah.
But as time went on, it wasn't just football. I mean, just witnessing some of the things that happened, I was just like, you got to be kidding me, you know? I mean, I don't know how many times I had that statement come out of my mouth, so... Yeah, I think we needed to have something happen like that. And super proud to be a part of it, man. It was an awesome night.
No, there's no question it was an awesome night. It almost seems like you're adversely impacted by Elliott Avent's baseball program, who has seen a whole bunch of those things happen, including what happened in Omaha a few months ago. Dave Doran is joining us. So obviously your Sunday was excellent, but I need to ask, if you could, what was in the Solo Cup?
It was a nice cold drink, man. Tasted really good, too. Yeah.
I bet it did. Look, your team, I think a lot of us who have watched your team develop knew that if Clemson's problem was offense coming in, that your team was uniquely positioned to make that more of a problem for the Tigers, because I think you have a very good defense at all levels, even though you've had some defensive losses to personnel, including Peyton Wilson, so far this season. That had to give you some confidence going into this game.
No, it did. I mean, we have a bunch of guys that have played for us, and losing Peyton at linebacker, Cyrus at safety, and now C.J. Clark at nose guard, those are things that are going to hurt us, you know, but we can't have any more.
Right.
Those injuries, those are three really good players that are leaders for us as well. So I'm proud of the guys that stepped in. Corey Durden played really well at nose guard, and I was happy for him. Jalen Scott at will linebacker, and Jakeen Harris at strong safety. Those guys all played well. So that's what we're going to have to do. But yeah, we matched up well, and kids executed a really good game plan that, Tony Gibson and the defensive staff had, and Tim Beck and the offensive staff.
Dave Doran is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I know you always feel like you go into games like this where if we do this and this, we can win this game. Was there a time during the game when it switched from we can win to I know we will figure out a way to win this?
I thought we were going to win the game all week when we got out there. It was exactly what I thought. I didn't think we'd have the penalties, but I thought we would be in a very close football game that was going to be decided on special teams. I mean, that was what I was telling our players and our staff, and that we'd have to come up with a couple really big-time plays to swing it, you know. And we did that, you know, with Emeka's catch and Devin Carter's catch. They made two great plays. Devin Leary gave him a chance with his throw, and you know, their receivers didn't make those plays, and so that was the difference in the game. You know, we just did enough on special teams to flip the field position several times to help our defense. But, you know, the 11 penalties and 3 missed field goals made it very difficult to put them away, and you have to give them credit. They played hard.
Yeah, I mean, they're not Clemson by accident. So that's that heart of a champion thing that you have to always deal with. Quickly to Devin Carter, because – obviously, the touchdown catch in double overtime was a spectacular catch and a great throw by Devin Leary. But he sort of redeemed himself, because there was an opportunity to make a big play in the middle of the game that I think he might have even misjudged just a touch. in trying to run under that post pattern in the middle of the field. How big is that for him?
Stuck his hands out a little early. He could have ran a few more steps and gained up on the ball. But he did. You know, he made up for it. You know, Devin's a competitive guy. He helps us in so many ways, not just catching the football. He's a great blocker. He's physical. He's a leader. He plays really well on our special teams. He starts on two of our special teams units. And so I know how much it meant for him to make those plays for his teammates.
Dave Doran is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Are you in any way concerned about the euphoria of a game and a win like this impacting you going forward?
We've talked about it already. I mean, it was one of the topics. First thing I talked about with our leadership council wasn't the win. It was about what the win could do to us if we don't handle it correctly. And the guys are all in on it. They understand it. They were speaking the same language I was. And so, you know, it's just about trying to get to the next one, enjoy the last one for a couple of days and turn our attention forward. You know, it's part of the process of being who you want. We didn't finish the season, you know. We just took a step in the right direction and put ourselves in the driver's seat for what we want to accomplish, and we have to embrace that and now protect it with our practice habits and our preparation.
How important or good is it that your next opponent gave Mississippi State so many fits?
We should have beat them. You know, they were up 20 points in the fourth quarter and lost, so our guys definitely know that. We watched a lot of Tech film getting ready for Mississippi State, so we're familiar with what they do, and they have good players. I mean, they've got transfers in there that have been productive at the Power 5 level, and you know, quarterback played at Oklahoma and West Virginia, a receiver from Tennessee, running back from App State. We've got some good guys on offense. They're scoring a lot of points, so we'll be ready to play them.
Dave Doran is with us here. NC State getting ready to play Louisiana Tech this week, coming off the win over Clemson. I've always looked at these types of games, these types of wins, as overcoming the mental hurdle as much as the physical. So walk me through that process for you and your team when you know you have a chance to beat a team like Clemson.
Yeah, it's the believing, you know, the getting them to believe that they can do something. It's so hard sometimes, particularly against a team that's done it for them, you know, repetitively, and everyone on that roster is used to winning. And for our guys, some of them weren't, you know, and my time here, and I showed them all this Friday night or Friday morning. We watched some tape together and showed the team, like, this is how we got over the hurdle with Florida State, showed them some clips from that game back in the, you know, earlier part of my career here where we won down there and some guys making some big-time plays with great effort. And then I showed them some plays in the Louisville game. We couldn't beat Louisville, and then we did. And showed them the blocked punt in the Notre Dame game, you know, how we won that game. Like, at some point, you guys have got to say no more, and you got to step up and make a play. And you're ready to do it. And I said it doesn't have to be everyone in the room. Everyone just needs to do their job. But there's going to be a point in time where two or three of you can impact the game, and you need to do it. And they did.
What did you say to Christopher Dunn? He missed a long field goal, which, I mean, look, I've watched enough NFL football this over this weekend where a bunch of guys missed some long field goals. But what did you say to Christopher Dunn after he missed? And like, I realize he had a rough game, and you guys won in spite of it. But what did you say to him? Because he's been great for you.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's the best field goal kicker I've ever been on a team with, you know, so Chris is going to be fine. I told him I love him. You know, I told him I know he's in pain, and nobody wanted that moment more than Chris Dunn, and it just didn't go his way. But he's going to get another opportunity to help us win a game, and he needs to bounce back, and that's how he redeems himself. That's going to be his story, you know, and everybody on the staff felt the same way. They brought him in the locker room after the game and let him know they had his back. Our players were phenomenal with him yesterday, and Chris is super competitive. He'll bounce back.
Yeah, I think I saw even on the field within the game, Ricky Person like coming up to him and giving him words of encouragement. I think Person's been great. Like, I love Bam Knight, but Person to me, there is a leadership element that he brings to your football team that I just don't think it's hard to replace.
Yeah, you know, Ricky's definitely the vocal guy in the running back room. He's tough. He's competitive. he cares a lot about this organization, and he's done a good job, you know, getting himself to be the player he is right now. He had a lot of injuries coming in, and took him a while to become a healthy version of himself, and I'm proud of him.
Dave Doran is joining us here. Oh, I wanted to ask you this about Devin Leary. You've had a lot of good quarterbacks here, one of which is starting in the NFL again in Jacoby Brissett. So talk to me about Devin Leary, and what do you think his best quality is, his best asset as a quarterback?
Well, he's clutch. Yeah, I think that's the most important thing you can have in that position is a guy that's clutch, and he is. And the moment's not too big for him. He's got incredible poise, and he's confident but not cocky. He's got a great arm, but he knows where to go with the ball, and he's consistent in his day-to-day routine and what he does in here in the building. We know what we're going to get, and he gives it to us every day.
All right, one more thing about Leary, and then just a quick question before I let Dave Doran go, and I appreciate your time. Obviously, a lot going on, and you have to get ready for Louisiana Tech. Did he really sit in your office in the summer and say, this is the year?
Yeah, he did.
That's awesome. I know there's a lot of – first of all, the Atlantic Division, maybe Clemson is not quite what they have been in the past, but holy cow, Wake's good, BC's good. Good luck, the rest of the way with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's not an easy out. I mean, Syracuse is playing good football right now, yeah. And, you know, we've got a bunch of games in front of us that we'll have to take one at a time and do our best to win because, I mean, I haven't seen a team on film in the Atlantic yet that looks like they're going to lay down. Everybody's going to battle and fight, and they've got good players and a lot of super seniors and everything else. So it's going to be a wild ride here down the stretch.
All right, final thing. Did you consider – going for two after the first after the touchdown in the first overtime?
No. Why would I do that?
I mean, one play to win the game.
The guys made 112 consecutive PATs and were at home.
No, it had nothing to do with Christopher.
So
Dunn.
No.
Okay, I was just curious because Christopher Dunn's not an issue for me. Like
you ever do that at home. If you're on the road and you're worried about the environment and all those things, then that's something you consider, but not at home.
Okay. That's the answer. Dave Doran, I appreciate your time. Congratulations on a great win and enjoying it. All too often, people don't enjoy these wins. And
I've learned that the hard way, man. You got to savor every one of them.
Well, go get more of them.
I appreciate that. We will. Go Pack.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting ADAM to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.